From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 31st day of July 2019. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's from Stuart Peterson. We'll check in on the crop tour that's making its way across the Canadian prairies and then hear from Drew Lerner about the weather forecast for those same areas and the growing regions across the planet. We'll also hear how the trade relations between China and the United States has been impacting the price of wheat and the export of canola from Canada. And we'll do that all right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Here are the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Wednesday afternoon. Corn futures down 11 cents in the lead option. September finished at $4.25. December at 410, 11 lower. And the May futures at 426, down 9.5. Next year's July down 9 at 430.25. August beans 14.75 lower at $8.64. November at 881.5, down 15.25. January 15 lower at 895. Bean oil down 56. Bean meal $2.10 lower. Wheat futures off 10 cents at 487.25. For the soft red September, the hard red September down 10.75. It finished at 422.75. October live cattle down 1.42.5. The feeders were 1.60 lower, and lean hogs were down the $3 limit. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson to take a look at what happened in Chicago.
Oh, gee, I tell you, Todd, I was so hopeful yesterday when we filled that gap on December corn at 420 that would kind of put at least a temporary bottom into the market. But it just doesn't seem to be doing that. And I think it's driven mostly by the weather forecast. You know, the weather forecast isn't showing extreme heat. It is showing a little less moisture. But then if you go down the road a little bit, they're saying, you know, temperate weather with a decent amount of moisture. So, you know, again, our bull is starving. You know, there's just nothing there for the bull to really pick up and run with.
I bet it has changed the support and resistance levels.
Unfortunately, yes, and not in the direction that we wanted. For September corn, we now have support at 396, 381, and 322. Resistance at 424, 441, and 469. And I'll remind everybody, these are weekly numbers off the weekly charts. December support 407, 397, and 322. And then resistance 431, 447, and 473. On beans, September 869, 854, and 804 support. 885, 904, and 935 resistance. And November, we've got 881, 866, and 815. And a really scary number is way down there at 731, one of the big long-term projections. But we'll leave that outside the game for now. And resistance at 898, 917, and 948.
So you mentioned that the bull needs to be fed. One of the ways that that happens is the export market. What do the inspections look like?
Well, unfortunately, it looks like a diet for the bull, okay? We had wheat exports 24% ahead of a year ago. They were 28% ahead last week. Corn 14% behind. It was 12% behind last week. Beans the only one that gained a little bit, 23% behind versus 24% behind last week. So we're not getting any support out of that, I can tell you that much.
Is the managed money changing places on the board?
You know, they've been very strange. When you look at soft red wheat, they went from being 2,000 contracts long last week to 21,000 contracts long. And we know, you know, we saw the bounce in wheat. Corn, from 146 long last week to 124 long this week. So they're shortening up their, getting rid of some of their long positions in corn. They shortened up their short positions. They bought back some of their short positions in beans, went from 52,000 short to 44,000. When you look at soy meal, 36,000 short versus 30,000 last week. So they increased there. And soy oil, 35,000 short versus 34,000 short. So, you know, when you look at the big picture, to me, that just looks like unwinding of spreads when you look at the beans, the meal, and the soy oil situation. And they're really not giving us a lot of what I would call good, solid direction. It looks like like treading water, basically, is what it does.
I know you've been on the road quite a bit recently. What have you seen in the field?
We traveled up from Missouri and came up into central Illinois I was absolutely flabbergasted. I saw cornfields that had humongous populations, dark green, and just as flat as a board. And I expected to see the ocean waves, basically. Then I saw, of course, seen cornfields that are short. Today I saw a cornfield that I'll bet is only probably 3 feet tall at the most. It's starting to tassel. My biggest concern is beans, to be honest with you. Between here and Missouri, there aren't as many bean fields as I expected to see, but there are definitely bean fields that haven't even closed up their rows at all yet. And so I don't know what's going to happen then. Then went from here up to northern Illinois and into southern Wisconsin, where I come from. And the minute you get out of Champaign County and you start going to the west into McLean County, you see it. You can just see where the pattern of heavy, heavy rain was. And the further north you go, basically the uglier it gets. There's no question about it. I mean, you do see fields that were pollinating. You saw fields that had heavy populations. The one thing I didn't see anywhere was any real yellow corn or beans, with the exception of one field in Champaign County where we had yellow beans. But Wisconsin is just awful. I mean, it's the fields are short. They're rolling. They were not anywhere near tasseling on anything that we saw at all. But again, so many more cornfields than bean fields. And so, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what the USDA really comes out with. One thing I did notice out driving today, and I'm still here in Illinois, is that we've got some fields on the outer edges that are firing. You know, that looks like, you know, we got a little bit of rain, but we certainly could use more rain. But I can't tell you how shocked I was at what I saw. I mean, those fields, I never expected to see a field that looked as beautiful as these fields look. And I even went up on the overpasses to try and see, you know, if I was wrong in what I was seeing. Because, you know, a field can hide a lot of bad things. But even from the overpasses, you just didn't see it. And so it was a surprise.
So what do you think trend line yields will look like, or what states might have?
Well, I've got some information on when you look at corn. Okay, we've got Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Minnesota, Missouri, North Carolina, Ohio, all below trend line. And that's 38% of all of our acres. Now, we do have states at trend line and above trend line. They account for 53.8% of the acres. And so, you know, that still tells you there's some acreage out there that nobody's really, you know, that's in the uncounted, the peripheral states, I guess, is what you would call it. But when you look at above trend line, you know, Nebraska is really the only state that's really a hugely significant state other than North Dakota. All the rest are states that maybe have 1 million acres to 1.4 million acres. You know, it's going to be, I'm anxious for that report to come out. When you look at beans, this is a scary one. Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa are all in states below trend line. And we have 51.3% of all of our acres at below trend line, and only 11.3% above trend line. And Nebraska is the only significant state there. So that leaves 32.1% at trend line. And in that, Minnesota is the only real, Minnesota and North Dakota are the two significant states there. So, you know, this is really a crapshoot when you come right down to it as to how everything's going to turn out. I guess like I said last week and the week before, I'm still more worried about beans, I guess, than I am corn necessarily, because I believe that we still have a lot of corn in storage that might help us meet our needs, but I'm just not so sure about beans.
On that note, what do we know about China and their situation for pork?
Well, one of their reporting agencies from agriculture there came out and said they feel they're going to have a shortage of 18 million metric tons of pork by the end of 2019. So I took that back and I extrapolated it to pounds. And it's hard for me to wrap my head around this, but that is 39.7 billion pounds of meat. And then I took it one step further and I looked at what the average slaughter weight was, you know, a carcass weight for hogs. And that's including when you're slaughtering boars, sows, and gilts. And that comes out to 192.6 million head. Now, you know, the protein that's closest to replacing pork, of course, is chicken. So, you know, the chicken guys are pretty excited about this, that they think that this is going to really push them. But I think it's interesting that Rabobank came out in April And they said that China's herd was estimated at 360 million animals, and they thought up to 200 million pigs could be culled or die due to this illness, you know. And so to me, this kind of confirms their guess, 192.6 million head. That is just huge, you know. And the thing is, it's interesting when you look at the bigger picture, because they think that the output is only going to fall approximately 30%. And the only reason it's 30% is because they had such heavy slaughter at the very beginning of the year. So now we could take this and then next year add another 15 or 20% drop. So, you know, I'm sure everybody's wondering, and I myself too, you know, when you thought about avian bird flu and how bad that was and how much time it's taken to get the industry back going, they expect that this could take a good 5 years for them to recover. But the big challenge, of course, is going to be how do you prevent disease and do they have the capital to be able to stock them, you know? And so this is a really, really tough situation over there.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate you being with me.
Well, I thank you very much. I love being here.
That is Jackie Vake. She is with Stuart Peterson. Hey, you know, in the month of August, there'll be a lot of farm tours here in the United States trying to assess the corn and soybean crops, but there's one going on right now in Canada, and it's assessing a whole series of crop. John Dredger joins us. He is with FarmLink Solutions and is based in Winnipeg, Canada. Thanks so much. You're not in Winnipeg. Where are you today?
Yeah, actually traveling through southern Alberta here as we're chatting. We've got our crop tour across the three prairie provinces here. We have cars really kind of leaving from multiple areas. And so I'm in started out in kind of central Alberta near Edmonton and have been meandering our way south over the last day and a half. So just a little south of Calgary here as we speak.
What crops do you look at?
So we're primarily looking at wheat and canola and barley and peas. And we also look at some of the more minor crops, things like lentils and flax and some of those sorts of things, which we grow here in Western Canada. But primary focus on the wheat and the canola and the barley.
Tell me about wheat, canola, which sometimes in Europe is called rapeseed.
You know, it really is variable, you know, certainly so, and it gets, you know, it's a large region, and so there's a lot of variance across the different regions. So, for example, we were in central Alberta yesterday, the crops there looked absolutely outstanding, but we sort of knew that coming in, it's an area that's had a lot of rainfall, and that's not necessarily an accurate reflection of everywhere across Western Canada. As we move into southern Alberta, there's more signs of some stress from areas that were just simply too dry early on. Some areas got more rain than others. Some crops, depending when they were seeded, have looked better than others. So it's gotten a little more variable as we go south. In some ways, that's probably not an unfair reflection of how a good chunk of Western Canada is. You know, early on in the year, a real large part of the prairies were very dry. We've got some beneficial rains, and obviously that's helped. But how much it helps really varies by region. Even in some small areas, a crop that got seeded earlier maybe is, you know, suffered because it got the rain too late. And so we're seeing certainly better crops than anyone was expecting, say, a month ago prior to the rains, but quite a bit of variability. So it'll be interesting as we compile our results kind of later on today and tomorrow morning what, as a group, we come up with. Because you know, we're mixing results across a wide area, and so that's kind of what we've been seeing here over the last couple of days.
And these compiled results will be presented at a conference, and I'm quite sure where it is. But Drew Lerner, I know I talked to earlier in the day, and he'll air here in just a moment. Was discussing with me those dry conditions over the last 2 years in the Canadian prairies and how they have been alleviated. He'll be at that conference too. Can you tell me something about it?
Yeah, so we're going to be gathering in Regina tomorrow, and so we'll be sharing our results from the tour and kind of what we've been seeing and how that, maybe as importantly, how does that fit with expectations that we and the rest of the trade have had kind of coming in. We'll also have Lackey Stevens from Lackstock Consulting. He'll be sharing a little bit about some global perspectives on wheat and barley and canola. They're based out of Australia. And then Drew Lerner will be sharing a bit of a forecast here as we get into the late summer and fall in terms of harvest weather and these crops that are still filling out. So we'll be looking forward to that here on this coming Thursday morning in Regina.
That's one part of a two-part conference. The second part is in November, called Grain World.
Yeah, that's correct. So in later November, we gather in Saskatoon for a couple days for a conference that's called Grain World, and kind of a range of different things. Where there's a little bit of a market outlook component to it, but really it's more of a conference that looks at things from kind of a bigger picture and longer term perspective. We'll be talking about geopolitical issues. We'll be talking a little bit about, just kind of how the industry looks here going forward on a longer term basis, looking at some technology and so forth as well. So it's, I would say, rather than sort of an outlook conference per se, there is some of that, but it's really a little more of a bit of a broader perspective and a little bit of a more strategic leaning in terms of the topics and the speakers that we're bringing in.
And before I let you get back out in the field and assessing what you're seeing there in the Canadian prairies, I would like to ask one more question. How has the China-U.S. trade dispute impacted wheat growers, in particular in China, as it relates to Huawei?
Yeah, that's created an enormous amount of uncertainty for farmers here in Western Canada, and probably I would say maybe canola is the crop in particular that has seen the biggest drop off in Chinese purchases. While it's not explicitly stated that there's a direct link, I think there's no question in anyone's mind that this is politically motivated. So China is our largest buyer of Canadian canola by far. We export approximately half of our canola crop, and China takes not quite half, but certainly a large portion of it. So when that drops off substantially, then we lose primarily one of our main export markets, and that directly affects prices. So certainly farmers in Western Canada are feeling that. And I think one of the really hard parts of that as well is just the uncertainty of these geopolitical things. And of course, you guys in the U.S. and the trade discussions with China, and sometimes it seems hopeful and then it's not. There's uncertainty. Who knows how long it'll last? And we're feeling some of that up here as well. So certainly it's been a negative for Canadian farmers. There's always hopeful that there's a resolution, but of course that's an open-ended question, and who knows when it ends. It's politics. So that's kind of an open question, and creates just a lot of uncertainty, unfortunately.
Hey, one point of clarification. The canola exports, are those used for canola oil, or are they used as a canola meal in hog rations?
So actually, they're used for both. And so in the case of canola, a higher portion of the seed is oil, so it would be primarily more so for the oil part of it that China would buy canola. The meal is used as well in livestock rations and actually in aquaculture and some other uses. But it would be a little more oil-focused than soybeans, for example, that they purchase. So the substitutes to an extent, but not quite direct one-for-one type substitutes. A little different in the sense of the proportion of oil and the nature of the oil and the meal are a little different, but largely oil-based.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it, John, and have a really good rest of your trip.
Great. Hey, I appreciate it. My pleasure.
John Dredger is a market analyst with FarmLink Solutions and is out on a crop tour this week across the Canadian prairies. He's based in Winnipeg, and we'll be wrapping up that tour later in the week with a presentation highlighted by Drew Lerner. Speaking of which, he's here now to take up the agricultural weather forecast. I caught up with him earlier in the day as he was getting ready to fly out to Canada for that crop tour conference. Hey, Drew, thanks for being with us.
I hope that the things over on your side of the fence are nice and neat and comfortable for you today.
Well, they're gorgeous, neat, comfortable. A little dry, I think. My yard, at least, has been telling me that, and farmers certainly have been saying something about it, though I think the weather at this time of the year seems more status quo than anything else. Can you give me any insight?
Well, that's exactly right. Those are the right terms to use. If we had gotten this crop in the ground like we wanted to, this would be absolutely perfect summer weather. And a lot of these crops are trying real hard to take advantage of the environment, but we do have that dryness issue. And really from Iowa through the heart of Illinois over to Indiana and parts of Ohio, we still are struggling. And the good news is that we don't have a lot of heat coming up, so that will help to conserve the moisture that we do have. But it's also going to keep these crops developing a little bit sluggishly. We really need a good drink of water and maybe a week of temperatures of just a few degrees warmer than we are now. But it could be worse, so I guess we shouldn't complain too much. Now, It was pretty darn cold earlier this week. I don't know if you're aware of it, but the temperature fell to 37 degrees in northern Minnesota a couple of mornings ago and set all kinds of records. And the cold went on up into Manitoba, Canada. And there's a lot of us out there who think maybe this is a little bit of what we may end up seeing when we get down into September sometime. There might have another shot of cool air. It's going to be a few weeks before we see that kind of thing come back again. But it was interesting to see such an intense cold air mass for the end of July. That's something you don't see a lot every day.
Speaking of Canada, what do the prairies look like? They've been awfully dry.
Yeah, we went through a 2.5 years worth of drought across a big part of the prairies, and they got a good drink of water late in June and into early July. The soil moisture profile really improved greatly, and the crops just started responding really well. In fact, there's some folks up there speculating that the crops are really in very, very good shape relative to where they were just a few weeks earlier. But it is turning dry again. Southern Alberta really never got as much water as everybody else did. So they are kind of limping along. And I just saw the soil assessment that we finished up yesterday. And it does show that a big part of southern Saskatchewan is now drying down again. But, you know, some of the early season crops up there are already maturing and getting ready to be harvested. That would be the pulse crops and some peas, of course, and lentils. And maybe a few of the spring wheat crops are starting to get fairly far along. But so dryness at this point, it may not be as big a deal as it might have been a little earlier in the season. But nevertheless, it is still going to be dry there for another couple of weeks.
Francis had two really big heat waves. Did they get any rain recently?
Most of France got rain last weekend. However, the interior north, about 1/4 of the country, it really didn't get more than about 5 or 6 tenths of an inch of moisture. And it was critically dry going into that period. So they got a little bit of relief for about a day or two, but they are really still very dry in that particular area again. The rest of the country did a little bit better, but there's still a big need for fixing the subsoil moisture. It's still very low. In fact, there's other areas in Europe that are also quite dry. Those would be in the south, mostly from the Romania, let's say, on over into Ukraine. They need some moisture there. And there looks like there's going to be some rain that will fall in those areas a little later in this next 4 or 5 day period.
Anything to report from the growing regions of China?
Absolutely. You know, we were very dry in the North China Plain through most of the spring and into the first half of summer. About 2 weeks ago, we started getting a little bit of rain here and a little bit there, and now we've got a bigger rain event coming up for this weekend into next week, and it looks like most of that dry biased area is going to end up seeing some significant relief. So I think we've seen the worst of the stress for China. Now it's just a question of whether or not we can fix the United States.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Look us up. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. The address there is willag.org, willag.org. One other place that you should visit online is the FarmDoc Daily website. The Agricultural Economist, right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus, posts a brand new article there each and every business day of the year. They're at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. If you find it easier, you can just visit the willag.org website, and you'll see the headlines, and when you click on those will pop right over to the FarmDoc Daily website from the College of ACES.